Blog Talk Radio.
John's article.
Sandy,
I think it's important that I wanted to read this poor, because I think it's important not to forget these poor people, these poor people who are just, you know, they've almost been forgotten, and there's 2 million of them out there right now without power.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? About without lights for the last week. And,
well, New Jersey is just a mess.
I know, but
in parts of New York.
Parts of New York and other places. And I think it's important. Lila and I will both read this.
It's kind of a long article.
But I think it's necessary for people to.
Why don't I start off and you can.
Okay, sure. It's called Millions Still Without Power as Temperature Nears Freezing in Eastern U.S.
1 week after Hurricane Sandy pummeled the eastern seaboard of the United States with huge winds and a record storm surge, nearly 2 million homes and businesses remain without power in New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut as temperatures fall near the freezing mark. Fear is growing that Sandy's death toll, already topping 100, will be augmented by further fatalities caused not by natural disaster, but rather the inability and willingness of all levels of government and a social system driven by private profit to mount an adequate relief effort to the millions of people left without electricity, heat, water, and food. On Sunday, New York City's billionaire mayor, Michael Bloomberg, announced that between 30,000 and 40,000 New Yorkers would be left homeless by the storm for a lengthy period. The bulk of them residents of the city's public housing developments. Much of this housing, he said, will be out of commission for a very long time. Bloomberg said that the numbers left homeless were comparable to those recorded in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, noting that many then left the city for Houston, Texas. These comments raised the very real possibility that the ruling establishment in New York may well use the devastation of Hurricane Sandy as a pretext for eliminating a section of the city's public housing, which layers of the financial and corporate oligarchy have long regarded as an anachronism and an impediment to profitable real estate development. Okay, I'm going to go. I just have the cat on my lap, folks. In many of the housing projects, conditions have gone from bad to worse after nearly a week without power, heat, and water. Even when the lights have been restored, as in the developments on Manhattan's Lower East Side, heat remains off and residents are attempting to warm themselves by turning on stovetop burners of boiling water, raising the threat of fire or asphyxiation. The overwhelming sentiment heard over and over again throughout the region is that victims of the storm have been left behind in working class and poor areas, while unlimited resources were lavished on getting Wall Street up and running with full power a day after the hurricane ended. Bloomberg was the target of these sentiments Sunday when he sought to make a brief disaster tour of the Rockaway section of Queens, which had been left without power since the storm. Residents were pushed back by his police escort when they began yelling, "When are we going to get some help?" and questioning what was going to happen to older people trapped in high-rise public housing. The mayor was hastily hustled out of the area by his bodyguards. The incident took place just a day after Bloomberg was forced to suddenly announce the cancellation of the New York Marathon, an event that had been held for more than 40 years. Public anger over the social inequality and class divide that pervades New York focused on the event, particularly after news reports that generators were being set up in Central Park for media tents and other facilities related to the race, while truckloads of food and water are arriving for the runners. People in the devastated areas of Queens, Brooklyn, and Staten Island and beyond demanded to know where their generators, food, and water were. The anger was exacerbated by the fact that the race's starting point was in Staten Island, where the bulk of the city's 41 deaths have taken place, and where the bodies of two little boys swept out of their mother's arms by the storm surge were recovered only on Thursday. It is still not entirely clear what caused Bloomberg to suddenly reverse himself only hours after he insisted that the race was necessary to give New Yorkers something to cheer about and to boost business. It had been reported, however, that the city's police commissioner, Ray Kelly, had weighed in heavily in favor of calling off the event. No doubt Kelly was receiving reports from the commanders of the Army of Police sent to maintain order in the devastated parts of the city that conditions were turning into a social powder keg that could be ignited by fury over the marathon. Bloomberg on Sunday urged people without heat to go to warming centers and shelters, warning, you can die from being cold. However, people in the affected neighborhoods have reported that many of these centers are already overflowing without room to sleep or enough food to give those coming in for help. Utility companies have given no precise timetable for when the top power will be restored, with reports that in more hard-to-hit areas it could be for as long as 2 weeks or more.
And now we got a nor'easter coming through.
Yeah.
That's great as well.
Meanwhile, still another storm is set to strike the region by the middle of the week. That's tomorrow, bringing heavy rains and winds as well as more coastal flooding. The New York Times noted Sunday that even after the power is restored and repairs are completed, the region's infrastructure will remain just as vulnerable to the next monster storm, rendered all the more likely and inevitable by climate change and the increasing frequency of extreme weather. Would you like to read now?
Sure.
The unwillingness of big business.
The unwillingness of big business to make the necessary investment to provide security to the population has become increasingly clear. The Times article and other commentary mentions figures like tens of billions of dollars to protect New York City's subway system or Con Edison's power stations and deliver a system from flooding. This is, of course, a tiny fraction of the money lavished on Wall Street following the financial meltdown of 2008, while Washington is spending at least 10 times that much to wage its war in Afghanistan this year. The attitude of predominant players with corporate ruling circles has summed up by Ralph LaRosa, the CEO of PSE&G, New Jersey's major electric utility. Asked about changing the company's infrastructure to prevent its switchyards and substations from being flooded out, he replied, if we moved them back, we'd have to condemn property that people are living in. Referring to the company's vital equipment, he said, some people say, why don't they raise them up? And we'll raise them 8 feet, and the next storm will be 9 feet. Finally, the people of New Jersey will have light and heat, it seems, will be determined by the power of the next storm. As Mr. LaRosa concerns himself with more immediate matters, such as PSE&G's profits for next quarter and his own compensation package, which topped $1.5 million last year. The Times article suggests that the failure to take any protective measures was a matter of lack of public will. It states that demands for such protection rise in immediate aftermath of disasters, but then memory recedes. The article continues, the sun is shining, the refrigerator's cool, the trains are running. Aren't electric bills high enough? Don't we pay enough for trains? And behind this cynical statement is the clear message that no resources are to be diverted from the profits of the banks and corporations or the mountains of wealth accumulated by Bloomberg and his link and his ilk to protect the population. Instead, even if any measures are taken, they will be paid for by gouging the working class in the form of higher taxes and wages and fees.
Yeah, wage freezes,
wage freezes, fees, and everything. It's really a sick situation, folks. And our hearts go out to those people who were without power tonight.
Oh boy, and it's cold.
It's bitter, and it's going to be worse the next few days. We're going to have snow and heavy winds, and I just can't imagine what it will be like for those people. Just hope they all get some kind of shelter. You know?
Yeah, a lot of them are afraid to leave their houses because you know they've been looters.
Yeah,
you know,
that's all basically in the southern part of Connecticut.
And the coast.
As well as the Long Island and, you know, Staten Island, of course, and New York, and sunny New Jersey. That's really, really quite frightening. But anyway, I don't know. I have been really critical of Obama over the years, and since he was elected, and
so
this
right.
stuff, and we just were disgusted. But you know, we're quite frankly we're quite frightened by Romney Ryan as well. And but one of the reasons, and whether this is going to would change at all under Romney, I really doubt. Probably it probably wind up increasing as much as it did under Obama.
Yeah.
But Obama and civil liberties, the prospect
has a bad
for four
record.
More years, yeah. And this was written by by Anthony Gregory, and it was in the Ukrnet Info. Most voters prioritize the economy. Most voters prioritize the economy, and far behind that comes foreign policy.
That's true.
Both major presidential candidates offer more of the same. None can make arguments that on these important issues, one side is worse than the other. But another important set of rules, those of civil liberties, has gotten much less attention than jobs, health care, or war. This is unfortunate because precedents set today on questions of law enforcement, presidential power, detention policy, surveillance, and the relationship between national security approaches and due process will forever affect the character of American political culture and its governing institutions. In the very long term, civil liberties issues are as important as any. In the very short term, they often mean life or death, torture or humane treatment, imprisonment or freedom for flesh and blood individuals. You want to finish up? You want to continue?
Yeah, show me where it is. Focusing on civil liberties issues, one could make a strong case that a second Obama term would be even worse than a Romney presidency. This prospect hinges on two basic factors. What Obama has done so far in the areas of civil liberties, and just as important, what Obama has done to national discourse. In practice, Obama has, for the most part, solidified Bush's extremist detention policies and in some respects gone further. He did officially repudiate torture, but with enough loopholes that the abuses have continued. The beatings and forced beatings at Guantanamo and limited use of renditioning in black sites. The ad hoc Bush policy of indefinite detention became formalized by Obama in May 2009 when he unveiled his new doctrine of prolonged detention and was codified, even for American citizens, in the NDAA he signed this last New Year's Eve. Obama never closed Guantanamo, of course, and he is lying when he says he tried his best. His followers are foolish or just disingenuous to repeat this White House propaganda. Obama could have closed it by executive order, just as Bush created it through executive fiat. And no one forced Obama to block the release of prisoners. His administration and courts already cleared as non-threatening persons. The president's original plan, incidentally, to move the prisoners to the Midwest was not actually an improvement, but it would have only implanted the Alice in Wonderland standards of Gitmo justice here within the United States. What's more, Obama rounded up thousands, even more than Bush ever put in Guantanamo, and put them in the prison facility at Bagram, where due process rights were even worse than at Guantanamo under Bush, and where a federal judge's attempt to extend habeas corpus rights was challenged by the administration. In his first military commission, Obama put a child soldier on trial for the war crime of fighting against an invading army, an international disgrace. Warrantless wiretapping, it has been vastly expanded. The tyrannical state secrets doctrine, Obama has given Bush a run for his money. The war on whistleblowers, it has been stepped up. Then, of course, there's Obama's kill list, a Bush-like legal theory that the Obama administration has frighteningly and explicitly articulated, the presumption that the president on his say alone can order the death of any person, even an American citizen, and that his deliberation over the decision alone constitutes due process. That's ridiculous. Bush's other obnoxious and ludicrous invasions of person and property in the name of terror, like the TSA, have only gotten worse, as have the FBI crackdowns on peaceful political dissidents. On the Patriot Act and the claimed authority of the president to start wars with completely unilaterally, the Obama administration has proven at least as bad as the Republicans. Then we consider the more mundane civil liberties issues that are not as directly connected to the war on terrorism. The militarization of police and the use of drones domestically have accelerated. As it concerns immigration, Obama has deported undocumented workers at a far faster rate than Bush, over 1,000 per day, and the percentage who have no criminal record has actually risen on his watch. On the drug war, Obama violated an easy campaign promise, one that even most Republicans could get behind, ceasing the federal raids of medical marijuana dispensaries, where states allow them to legally operate. Under Obama, the raids have escalated by a factor of 8. All the while, Obama's defenders claim that these injustices occurred despite Obama's best of intentions, not because of his direct action. He's just the president. He can't make laws on his own, they say. This is all a bunch of hogwash. The president is supposedly limited by the Constitution, but this has never stopped Obama or past presidents from acting unilaterally on a whole host of issues. If Obama can slightly reform immigration by executive order, as he did several months ago, he could go further easily. He could order the marijuana raid stopped. He could pardon medical marijuana patients convicted of federal crimes. He could close Guantanamo. Instead, he issues orders that make the conditions worse for the detainees there. At a minimum, Obama could refrain from blocking the release of innocent people. The craven apologia we get from Obama's partisan speaks the second reason the Democrat might be worse than the Republican on these issues. Obama has marginalized civil liberties in this country, made the mainstream left stop prioritizing these issues. We saw this with the progressive bloggers who stopped prioritizing the war on terrorism and started focusing on health care in 2009. We saw this with the Democratic National Convention, which abandoned civil liberties issues from its platform this year. The overall climate has gotten much worse on these issues. When the current president took office, the American people were tired of Bush's fear-mongering. The calls to close Guantanamo sounded on both sides of the mainstream spectrum. In 2009, polls indicated that 68% of Americans opposed indefinite detention. Similar polls revealed widespread opposition to torture. I'm going to give this to Leo to read a little bit, where it says under Obama, right there.
Yeah. Under Obama, who has signed off on so many Bush-era violations of civil liberties, public opinion has shifted to for the worse. Americans favor torture by far higher margins than throughout the Bush years. Then there was the Washington Post poll released early this year. The survey shows that 70% of respondents approve of Obama's decision to keep open the prison of Guantanamo Bay. The poll shows that 53% of self-identified liberal Democrats and 67% of moderate or conservative Democrats support keeping Guantanamo Bay open, even though it emerged as a symbol of the post-September 11 national security policies of George Bush, which many liberals bitterly opposed. Left liberals who have decided that innocent people locked in Obama's dungeons don't count as much as beating the Republicans deserve some of the blame, but so do the conservatives who disingenuously or perhaps just ignorantly attack Obama for doing the opposite of what he's actually done. They say he's coddling terrorists with due process and being weak on illegal immigrants. None of this is true at all, and the conservatives' ideological support for the police state will be a problem no matter who is president. But the left liberals have dropped the ball totally, and many have become apologists for the worst Bush-era excesses. When Paul populist anger about the TSA rose far too many progressives saw it as Tea Party opportunism, and so sided with the administration. When Obama suggested a show trial for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in New York, too many progressives defended this as though it would be substantially more just than the show trials in Guantanamo. Then Obama blamed the out-of-power right of his comrades in Congress for keeping Guantanamo open. Too many lefties have gone along with this obviously dishonest excuse. And all modern presidents have been terrible on civil liberties, but Obama has done as much to build on his predecessor's awful record as Bush did to build upon Clinton's. Meanwhile, these issues of human rights have become non-issues because left liberals would rather defend Obama's presumably great domestic economic policies and criticize him for his kill list, kangaroo courts, and dungeons. Well, Mitt Double Guantanamo Romney has no apparent philosophical objection to the Bush-Obama police state to militarize law enforcement or to a president with truly despotic authority. And neither does Obama. Romney could very well prove to be worse in practice, but at least he'd run the risk of people noticing. At least the debate over civil liberties would return. At least half the country would no longer see the arrest of sick marijuana patients, the mass deportation of poor migrants, and the targeted summary execution of American citizens. The torture of whistleblowers is unfortunate, but a necessary evil for which the president only deserves some blame. Instead, the blame would fall directly where it belongs, on the man sitting in the Oval Office. I could never recommend supporting Romney, who I think would take this country further down the path of deficit spending, corporatism, financial insanity, militarism, and big brotherism. But I think anyone concerned about civil liberties in particular would refuse to support the continuation of the current regime. Progressives concerned about the future of their party should be especially cautious. The Democrats will permanently be the party of the kill list, and indefinite detention of Obama wins his referendum.
Yeah.
So the problem with this article is, like any most articles about this, I have a problem with
it. It's very discouraging, though, when you hear that list of things.
It's
just something you think, oh, I remember.
It's stuff we all know. We've always talked about on the show, but I think what bothers me, it troubles me so much, is that this guy says he doesn't want to vote for Romney. And he doesn't want to vote for Obama. You know?
Yeah.
And I can understand that. I didn't either.
Well, I didn't
but
either.
But then he says he's afraid that Romney may be worse.
Uh-huh.
Right? If that could possibly be.
The only way you can stop the guy that's worse is to vote against him.
Vote against him. You know, so, but, you know, it's like, that's what we did tonight, man. I don't know if I'll regret that vote or not. I don't know. But I don't think so. And I don't think I will. The only thing that I regret, Lila,
what?
Is that you and I had to vote at all.
Uh-huh.
For two very, very poor candidates. You know, I mean, there's no great leaders here. You know, it's all muck and politics and bullshit. And we don't know what we're going to get. Right?
Yeah, well, I do.
What are you going to get?
Well, I'm hoping with my vote, is that what you're asking me? I'm hoping that Social Security continues and Medicare and Medicaid for the people who need it. I hope unemployment is extended.
And I hope that people get mad enough at Obama to say, hey, knock off the bullshit, arrest the bankers, arrest the criminals, you know what I mean? And legalize marijuana, legalize GMO labeling, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. All of these things that need to be done, do, you know, and get off the pot, you know, and do something because, you know, you're really screwing things up, though. You know, I mean, you're not helping things. And Romney has no clear path to helping anybody but himself. You know what I mean? Whatever. tough decision. It was a sickening one. You have to be forced to vote for somebody. Well, you're not forced. You know, nobody's forced to vote. But consciously, you know, if democracy does mean anything, and it seems like they wouldn't be spending $200 billion on this campaign, on this.
The payback must be enormous.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the people do have some say in this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They really do, to the extent that, you know, they can vote. So we'll see. But, see what happens. I think it's time for a little music break.
Oh, that would be good.
Congo, Republic of Congo, Guatemala, Ivory Coast, Kyrgyzstan, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Mali, Marshall Islands, Monaco, Mongolia, Paraguay, Sao Tome Principe, Sweden, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and the Vatican City. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It really is.
Those are the only countries that haven't been invaded by England. Wow. That's amazing. That's really amazing. But anyway, you want to read this?
Sure. What's that one?
Yeah. This is kind of interesting. It was Lockheed Martin is ready.
Oh, I did see that.
Lay off 123,000 people and other defense contractors.
Nobody's alluded to that.
And the reason for that is that the Obama campaign has asked them to hold off layoffs until after the elections. Do you want to read this?
Yep. If you can just move it over here. I can't see that far. Thank you.
Okay.
And this is from...
The
Trenches, worldreport.com. And the article is by... doesn't really say. I guess a group. Probably from that group. Tea Party Tribute. President Obama's administration has asked Lockheed Martin to delay its announcement of layoffs of 123,000 employees to make the unemployment numbers look much better. Lockheed Martin is one of the several defense contractors ready to lay off tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people after the election. These numbers may indeed rocket the unemployment figure past 8%. The layoff notice announcement came by way of Yahoo.com on October 1st and was quickly buried, apparently to fool the voters into believing the economy is much better than represented. It's difficult to understand the importance of Lockheed Martin's latest announcement on the race for the White House. The defense contractor said on Monday it will not be issuing employee latest layoff notices to 123,000 workers on November 2nd. I guess that didn't happen. Just 4 days before the presidential election. Amidst all the super PACs and campaign ads, the threat of telling a sizable chunk of voters in key areas of the country they could lose their jobs. And that would affect the election.
Yes, it would.
If the election didn't go Lockheed Martin's way, was one of the most potent examples of corporate electioneering. But the layoff threats was largely unreported outside of the Beltway trade publication. Here's why today's announcement matters. Basically, the bottom may fall out of the economy after November 6, 2012, with hundreds of thousands to be laid off. This would be devastating. Defense contractors agreed to delay the announcements in a sweetheart deal with the White House will pick up any costs associated with these layoffs.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's sick. That's corrupt.
In other words, we're paying for a month of wages for 120,000 people. That's what it sounds like.
Yep.
They were going to lay them off in October.
Lockheed, one of the biggest employers in the key battleground state of Virginia, previously warned it would have to issue notices to employees required by law due to incoming defense cuts set to begin to take effect after January 1st. Because of the failure of the Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction, the so-called Super Committee, which was created to find a way to cut $1.5 trillion from the federal deficit over the next decade. I guess they could do that. Oh, boy. The move to delay the announcements of these massive layoffs and cover the costs was totally illegal, according to Senator Lindsey Graham. Remember, if you watch the third presidential debate, President Obama assured the 70 or so million viewers that these cuts in defense would not happen. Oh, boy. I got to see here. Senator Lindsey Graham says that he will do anything he can to block the Obama administration from reimbursing defense contractors for severance costs if the firms don't send layoff notices to employees. The Obama administration issued guidance to cancel contracts across the board. The board cuts will be set to take effect on January 2nd, right when the bills come in after Christmas. The layoff notices have become a politically charged issue because they could have come just 4 days ahead of the election because of a 60-day notice required by federal law for mass layoffs. There's a greater message here from the American people greater than the horror of how the president plans on destroying our military. In less than 72 hours, we will know if we have a new president or not. It does not appear that the majority of American people are tired of the change Obama had in mind. Change in the form of crushing unemployment, a stagnant economy, 15 million people on food stamps, 23 million unemployed or underemployed, a second world America, gutting the defense sector, etc., are not what Americans had in mind when they heard the president first promise to change. Americans feel they were scammed in classic bait and switch fashion. The greater message that is getting louder and louder to President Obama is that the majority of Americans are saying to him is that the majority of Americans are saying him.
The message that is getting louder and louder to President Obama is that the majority of Americans are saying that.
They didn't really.
That doesn't make sense.
They didn't give. Oh, maybe you have to go down here after that. No?
No.
They left out some words there.
The greater message that is getting louder and louder to President Obama is that the majority of Americans are saying that. They get that in quotes.
Well, they left out some words, obviously.
Guy, proofread your damn blog before you. No, good God, it makes some sense. I like this. There's a quote here of David Icke on his site, and it says, it's by J.R.R. Tolkien. It says, "All that is gold does not glitter, not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by frost." It's by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now.
Do we have any audio we can play for our folks?
I was trying to find something, and I really didn't. That we play on this machine here.
It plays mostly everything.
Well, no, it only plays any of the stuff that's in the that's YouTube.
Just a second, folks. Leo's looking for something.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was kind of like.
He got lost in computer screen land.
Yeah.
Well, then pick an article, Leo.
Wonder if we can play this one.
Then pick something.
Illusion of choice.
It was on page one. Probably.
I know, but I just passed it. It's really bugging me that I can't find it. Sorry, folks, I didn't mean to. Siri. I hate that when it happens. I just lose it. It was a Carlin video.
I don't think it was a video. It was just a poster, like a picture. I saw that. It was on the first page.
I had to laugh at this article because, this article is that it says 90 million voters 90 million are to shun U.S. election reports.
Oh, I read that. That's not much of an article, really.
It wasn't, but what made me laugh about it was that the guy's trying to say that 90 million eligible voters decided to withhold their ballots in the presidential election. But they always do.
Yeah.
You know, we got about 150,000 voters last time.
Who didn't vote.
There were over 50 million that didn't vote. And it's going to be the same. It's like that in every election. If you can imagine all 200 million voters voting, it would be pandemonium at the voting booths. We wouldn't be ready for that.
Well, as it is, they're having a very difficult time in the Northeast.
They're not having it now. Yeah. Crazy.
Because a lot more people showed up than they realized.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, we have some trouble with some polling places here in the Northeast. You know, the generators ran out of gas or the polling place was changed. And I heard complaints when I was listening to a New York station about voting in New York. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
People are waiting hours to vote and they're cold. They didn't sleep last night because they have no heat and they have no electricity. And it's just awful.
It was a horrible thing. Anyway, I wanted to. There was this article I wanted to mention tonight about a health article. I'm going to bring up a few health articles tonight. And one was the 7 affordable nutrient defense foods to stockpile for survival. I just thought Lila and I could just read the 7 here, and they're interesting because a couple of them I wasn't aware of. Raw almond butter. Though they are somewhat difficult to find since the Almond Board of California decided to, in 2007, to mandate that all domestic almonds be pasteurized, seeking out truly raw almonds for long-term storage is a good bet for survival. And it's extremely good and high in everything. And it stores in freezers and everything. That's great stuff. So the second one is brown rice. Now, when most people think of long-term storage foods, the quintessential bean and rice probably come to mind, as both of these foods last an incredibly long time when stored dry, though it will not last as long as white rice. Brown rice is a complete food that will provide real nourishment in the event that the food supply becomes disrupted. I didn't know brown rice was a complete food.
What do they mean by that exactly?
Well, it means it's protein-rich, and carbohydrate. Balance that will provide real nourishment in the event of the food supply.
Whereas white rice, that's been bleached out, I guess.
It lasts longer, but it doesn't have the nutrients. When stored by dry seal containers, brown rice stays fresh for about 5 years.
Wow.
And could potentially even longer without going rancid, which is why storable superfood companies like Storable Organics include it in their kits. The other one is chia, hemp, and other superfood seeds. Are we done?
Sure. I got to put this where I can see. Okay. Chia, hemp, and other superfood seeds, an absolute essential food category you will want to keep handy in anticipation of social upheaval are superfood seeds. Chia, hemp, and various other varieties of superfood seeds will last several years on the shelf without going rancid. Chia seeds, in particular, are an excellent survival food as they are loaded with complete protein, omega-3 fatty acids, and a host of vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients.
I wonder if that's the chia pit.
Seed,
it grows real fast like that.
Even more impressive is the fact that chia seeds can very easily be added to water or other liquids and almost instantly maximize their nutrient bioavailability. Organic chia seed is available at the Natural News Store. Fresh unwashed farm eggs. It may come as a surprise to some to see eggs on the list, but fresh unwashed eggs obtained directly from a farm or from backyard chickens possess a unique outer coating that will actually keep them fresh up to a year when stored in the refrigerator. This outer coating known as Bloom, will even protect eggs from spoilage and contamination up to 3 months when stored at room temperature, which means rotating a steady supply of fresh eggs and always having new ones on hand is a great way to ensure access to eggs in the event of a food storage shortages. Carrots. Carrots are somewhat similar in that they can be stored somewhat long-term when unwashed and covered with sand or mulch, which act as a type of earth-based bloom, according to Sweetwater Organic Farm. Carrots stored in this manner in dark, cool, and well-ventilated areas will last for up to 5 to 6 months, ensuring the availability of fresh, nutrient-dense products, no matter how limited the food supply may become on a societal scale. Carrots can also be stored in the freezer for up to a year when peeled, cut, and blanched. Apples, like carrots, apples can be stored for many months as well if properly prepared. Dark, thick-skinned, unwashed apple varieties can last for many months when wrapped individually in newspaper and stored in cardboard boxes. Apples, as well as a host of other fruits, can also be cut up, dried, and vacuum sealed for long-term storage. Okay. You want to go right here? Oh, that's the last one.
That was the last one.
Quinoa?
Quinoa.
The grain-like superfood, quinoa, which contains roughly 14% protein content, will serve you and your family well in the event of emergency. Easily reconstituted with water, quinoa in dried form will last an astonishing 25 years or more, which makes it an excellent long-term storage food. And since it's considered a complete food, bearing all the essential amino acids and an impressive fatty acid profile, it is a near-perfect survival food for providing both sustenance and balanced nutrition, even when other food options have run dry.
Quinoa.
Quinoa.
Yeah, so you check that out, see if you can buy some.
It's a grain, like, kind of.
Yeah, I think I'd like to check it out and see what that is. And I've never heard quinoa before.
Maybe we've just never paid attention.
Maybe not.
Maybe we've seen it and just walked by it.
I didn't know it was like 25 years you could store that grain.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's see. This one's kind of funny. New Jersey residents are arming with anything they can find. Shotguns, bows, bats, and machetes. Imagine that.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting rough there. And they're not telling you. You know, it's an extremely volatile situation in New York and New Jersey following the devastation of Superstorm Sandy. It's getting worse by the day, with the civil society deteriorating so rapidly. The residents are arming themselves with anything and everything they can, including shotguns, baseball bats, machetes, even bows and arrows. With looting getting worse and authorities stretched thin, hardened New Yorkers are ready to battle low-life criminals to protect their homes and stores in storm-ravaged areas, hit hard by break-ins and pilfering, the New York Post reported. Residents in Staten Island, Coney Island, and other boroughs are complaining that they have been forgotten by emergency responders and city authorities, as evidenced by the dramatic rise in criminal activity that has forced residents in the most beleaguered parts of the city to load up guns, sharpen machetes, and brandish a host of other weapons as a show of force against predators. One resident, Chiquinto Gonzalez, 42, armed himself with a baseball bat and stood guard outside his two-story row house located on West 27th Street near Neptune Avenue with his family nearby. Desperate residents using anything they can find as a weapon. Another Coney Island resident, Robert Alveals, was seen brandishing a rusty 3-foot-long machete and warning that he had a gun as well. Having lived on Coney Island with his wife since 1995, Avil said he was ready to take on criminals, singling out phony burglars who were posing as employees of the local power company, Con Ed. "I'm prepared inside here," Elvis, 76, told the Post, showing off his machete. A resident of the Coney Island houses, Chris Lane, 50, had assembled a small arsenal to repel looters and criminals, including a double-pump shotgun. He also, he told the paper he had already scared off a group of thugs lurking around the hallways of his building when Sandy came roaring through the city Monday evening. He said, "They were roving in packs, not just one or two. I had more than a little something, too," said Lane, referring to his weapons. "I'd let it be known that my floor is off limits." Outside a home in Long Beach, a sign summed up the weary New Yorkers were feeling. "Looters will be shot by local vet." And another sign in a different neighborhood says, "Block protected by Smith & Wesson," a reference to the firearm. "In chaos, it's pandemonium out here," Chris Damon, a resident of Rockaways in Queens, which continues to struggle without power or assistance. It seems like nobody has any answers," he said. "I feel like a victim of Hurricane Katrina. I never thought it could happen here in New York, but it happened." The paper noted, with little police presence in the storm-ravaged streets, many residents of the peninsula have been forced to take their protection into their own hands, arming themselves with guns, baseball bats, and even bow and arrows to ward off thugs seeking to loot their homes. So much for gun control. The worsening chaos has led many New Yorkers to change their behavior in ways they never thought they would have to. "We booby-trapped our door and keep a baseball bat inside our bed," Danielle Harris, 34, told the New York Daily News. Colin Singlehurst, a local surfer, said he stockpiled anything he could, knives, machetes, bows, and arrows. "And I would take a looter with a boa if I felt threatened. I would definitely use it," he said. It's like the Wild West, a borderline lawless situation. Knives, machetes, bows, and arrows. Do you wonder how many New Yorkers and New Jersey residents who once supported gun control laws and shunned firearms for personal protection have now changed their minds? James Sandrick, city council, senses the growing frustration. He knows that what is occurring. The lack of support, the lawlessness, the growing anarchy is waiting to boil over. "We have an explosive mix here," he told the Daily News. "People will take matters in their own hands." But his anger is directed at the Long Island Power Authority, the electric company.
Oh, boy.
"NIPA has failed the people of the Rockaways," he said. "And it's a question of
class."
Those
are all poor areas?
Yeah, serving the richer areas of Long Island and ignoring the Rockaways.
Yeah, that's been a complaint.
"Really, Mr. Sanders? Here's a question for him and his fellow councilmen that the people of their borough should be asking. What did you do to prepare the community for the most destructive storm in many generations? Turnabout is fair play. The best answer was the first answer, be prepared. I won't let him off the hook by politicizing this disaster and pointing his finger to blame at someone else, but I will give him a little breathing room with some cold, hard truth. The fact is, there's no way that Long Island or any of the hardest hit areas could have ever prepared for the kind of storm."
No. I don't know how you'd prepare for something like
that. "It's not logically possible, logistically possible. It's not economically possible. And cities, townships, and boroughs should take a lesson from this storm and prepare it the best they can for the next time. Perhaps stockpile food, water, gasoline, and never enough resources to fully prepare for storms." And I just wanted to say, too many people in Sandy's wake who thought they were prepared did not have a plan B. Now they are suffering like the rest. And those of us who are warm and dry right now need to be paying particular attention to the worsening situation in New York and New Jersey and learning from it before it happens to us and we are thrown into a similar situation.
That's true. Whoever thought that a situation like Louisiana could happen in New York City, in New Jersey, because it's not exactly the same, but it's similar.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought?
Well, we're at the end of our show, and I just wanted to say that please join us tomorrow night. I hope we have Larry Dorman on. we'll be talking.
Because he wants to talk about the election.
We'll be talking about the election, today's election, and see who won, and talk about the pros and cons of whoever does win.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what the results are.
So I wish you a happy election eve.
Yeah.
And hope your candidate...
I hope you're safe and warm, and let's...
Yeah, we hope you're safe
and let's wish that for the people who aren't, that if their lights and their electricity or their gas or whatever they need gets turned on quickly.
And on that, let's hope whoever wins this nightmare of an election has a little empathy and compassion for people. And hopefully the people will have compassion for each other. Yeah.
I hope they work as hard, whoever gets elected, at solving this problem that people have as they did at getting elected, because spent plenty of money and time on themselves doing that.
Yeah, I guess somebody like said, you know, some of these guys have spent like four or five or six different states today.
Oh my God.
To bump up the laser.
Well, good night, folks.
Yeah. So good night, everybody, and have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.